recommended in the third section of the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that one goes beyond acting to gain something. Of course, when we act fruitively, according to prescribed duties, it's better than not acting according to the prescriptions of Shastra, Guru and Shastra. But when we still, our attempt is to gain some material benefit, it is inferior. It means that we lack transcendental knowledge. And what is that transcendental knowledge that we lack? We lack understanding that we have nothing to do with this material world, that we are souls, that we are eternal. And therefore, because we lack this knowledge, we are acting as if we are bodies, material bodies, and attempting to squeeze pleasure out of combining the senses and the sense objects. So better than acting in that way, where we are trying to get some pleasure from the material world, even though we may understand that Krishna is the goal, is to follow what Krishna says starting in text 17. To take pleasure in the self, one who is like that, his human life is meant simply for self-realization. For him, he actually has to perform no prescribed duties. Yet Krishna explains that he does perform his duties. And what is the answer? Why? To set a good example. And he cites the example of King Janaka, and he even says, myself, as Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I even perform prescribed duties. I do my duty. For if I didn't do my duty, then the world would be ruined, because everyone would say, oh, Krishna's doing this, so why shouldn't I do it? And people do say that. Krishna's dancing with the gopis, why shouldn't I dance with the gopis? Krishna takes the wives of other men and dances in the moonlight, so why shouldn't I do it? So that is the tendency of the conditioned soul, and it is also called envy. Envy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and because we are envious of everything that Krishna does, we cannot expand ourselves into so many thousands of persons, unlimited persons as Krishna did. We cannot do any of those things. We have no transcendental potency. He has nothing to do with the three modes of material nature. So his dancing with the gopis has nothing to do with anything mundane at all, no lust. But still, if Krishna does something, yad yada tiriti shesh does, so therefore everyone wants to do it. This is the tendency born of envy. So Krishna says, therefore, I follow my prescribed duties. And actually, Krishna's dancing with the gopis in the rasa dance is to show that he is not only Narayan and Vishnu, but actually he is above all rules and regulations. Completely above all rules and regulations. And this is one reason why Krishna actually does dance with the gopis. But in any case, in the regular activities, Krishna sets the perfect example. He marries, and in each one of his 16,108 palaces, he lives a completely religious life. But no one can imitate that religious life that Krishna leads, because, for instance, even Narada Muni, when he saw Krishna, he wanted to see Krishna's marriage, or he heard about Krishna's marriage, where he married 16,108 wives. Now someone could say, well, you don't have to be God to marry 16,108 wives. But not only did Krishna marry 16,108 wives, he married them all at exactly the same second, at the same time. So one could say, well, he could have put them all together in one huge crowd, and he could have married them 16,108 wives all at the same time. But no, he didn't put them in one crowd. Each of them was there in their own palace. completely separate. And he expanded himself, not exactly, but he was in each place because Krishna is all-pervading by nature. This is the very... Krishna is everywhere. He's omnipotent. So there's no problem for Krishna to manifest himself in 16,108 places at the same time. He can manifest himself in 16 zillion, billion, trillion places at one time, and it would still be no effort for him because he's already there. He's everywhere. So he married 16,108 queens, all at the same time, in different places. Now, can anyone do that? So we shouldn't imitate Krishna's amazing feats, which are so far beyond any rules and regulations, those feats in which he proves himself and shows himself as the Supreme who is beyond the rules and regulations. We cannot imitate Krishna like that, but we should follow his good example in his religious life. And Krishna is saying that if I did not lead such a religious life based on prescribed duties, everyone would want to follow, and therefore the world would be put to ruination. Text 25. As the ignorant perform their duties with attachment to results, the learned may similarly act. In other words, those who are ignorant will perform their prescribed duties attached to the results, and those who are learned will also perform their prescribed duties, but without attachment. So here is the contrast. The learned will do the duties without attachment, and the ignorant will perform their duties with attachment. And why will the learned perform their duties without attachment, not trying to get anything from their duties? Why? For the sake of leading people on the right path, just to set the proper example. Now how should those who have knowledge, who are not ignorant, who are detached, who are working not to get anything? It is hard to conceive even of someone working not to to get anything, because the fruitive mentality is so deep within our consciousness that if there is nothing to obtain, there is no reason to work. So how should one in knowledge who is detached, self-satisfied, and working not to gain anything, how should such a person act, relate to those who are ignorant and are working to gain things in the material world? That question is answered in text 3:26. So as not to disrupt the mind of ignorant men attached to the fruitive results of prescribed duties, a learned person should not induce them to stop work. Rather, by working in the spirit of devotion. So here is the first way that he relates to him, or the second way. So the first way is what he shouldn't do. He shouldn't tell them to stop work. He shouldn't preach that your work, everything is foolish that you are doing. You cannot be happy by material work. He should not preach like that, Krishna is saying. If these people don't have the capacity to engage in bhakti, he should not preach at all that materialistic fruit of work is bad. He should not preach at all like that. Rather, first of all, he should work himself. Joshayet sarvakamani. He should work himself, and also, that's vidvan yukta samacharan. He should practice. The learned person should engage himself in working. So that's the first thing. He should set a good example. And secondly, he should not tell them to stop work, but rather he should engage them in all sorts of activities for the gradual development of Krishna consciousness. He should teach them by his good example, by his philosophy, how to work in a detached fashion and be much happier than if he was working to gain some of the fruit of his work and trying to squeeze pleasure from the senses. Because after all, people work thinking that the fruits of their work are going to make them happy. But when they understand by the example of a Krishna conscious person, or someone who's practicing Nishkam Karma, when they understand that it is detachment from the fruits of the work that make one happy, then, because their goal is happiness, they will engage in a detached fashion. And that detached fashion ultimately means that one should set the example of offering the fruits of his work in Krishna's service and achieving great, great transcendental happiness by that. So he should teach them by his words, by his examples, how to be happy by engaging the fruit of work in Krishna's service. And he should not stop them from working. Now there are two different kinds of people, again, who are working. One is attached, one is detached. So what is the difference? They are working. The difference is the knowledge that they have. And what is the knowledge that the person who is trying to obtain the fruit of his work, what is his knowledge? What is his realization? What is his consciousness like? That is described in the 27th verse. The spirit soul, prakriti kriyamanani, gunai kamani savasha, ahankarava mudadma, kartaham iti manyate. The spirit soul, this is how one who is attached to the fruits of his work, how is he thinking? The spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities. He thinks, I am the one doing it. Kart aham iti manyate. He is thinking, karta aham. I am the one who is doing it. By my power, by my strength, and therefore, because I am the doer, I should also be the enjoyer. But actuality, he is thinking himself, bewildered by his false ego, bewildered by Maya, bewildered by identifying with the body and with the mind. He is thinking himself the doer of activities that are actually carried out by the three modes of material nature. Actually, the interaction of Maya, of goodness, passion, and ignorance is pushing everyone to act and act in a different way. Between the demigods and the different airs moving in the body and the three modes of material nature, we are practically speaking doing nothing, but yet, bewildered by false ego, fooled by our own desire to enjoy ourselves, we think, Kart aham, I am the doer, and therefore I am the enjoyer. This is called Maya. Now, this verse explains that the living entity does nothing, but actually the living entity, it is not that he does nothing, because if he had no choice and was doing nothing, there would be no need for the Bhagavad Gita, because how could he follow Shastra or not follow Shastra? He is doing something. And later on, in the 18th chapter, Krishna will explain that there are five different factors of action. And what is the ultimate factor? The Supersoul. So ultimately, it is Krishna, ultimately, is doing everything. But this verse explains that basically that we are not the doers. Why does it explain that, even though in the 18th chapter it will explain that there are five factors of action? Why does it explain that we are not the doer? Because Krishna wants to break our false ego. And all day long, all night long, we're laboring and working, just simply thinking, Kartaham. I am the doer, therefore I am the enjoyer. So Krishna wants to smash that concept for us. So therefore he's explaining that these activities are actually carried out by the three modes of material nature. Krishna takes no responsibility, even though he is the cause of all causes, sarva karana karanam. He is just sanctioning as the super soul. We want to do something by the mercy of the three modes of material nature which are under his control, daivyesha gunamayi, mama maya, Krishna says, mama maya duratya. It is my maya, so that means that this three modes of material nature, which Krishna is saying is doing everything, is ultimately under his control. So ultimately he is the one who is doing everything. But so that we don't blame Krishna, just like we may smoke a cigarette or something, and then someone say, why are you smoking your cigarette? Say, well, Krishna made me do it. How can I'm not kartaham iti manyate? Why should I think that I am the doer of anything? How could even a blade of grass can't move without Krishna sanctioning, desiring it? So therefore, it's Krishna's fault. So why should I get any karma? If the living entity isn't doing anything, why should he get the reaction for it? But actually, it is not Krishna's making people engage in sinful activities. He is sanctioning. He is allowing people to act foolishly, because it is their desire. Yeyatamam prapadyante. He is simply reciprocating with people's desire. If we want to engage in nonsensical, passion, ignorant activities, Krishna will give us the power to do so. If he doesn't give us the power to do so, we cannot do it. So in that sense, he is the cause of all causes, but he is only sanctioning our nonsensical desires, waiting till we come to the right conclusion and turn to him. He is situated in our hearts. He's waiting till we turn to him. How many times will we engage in nonsensical activities and it bring pain and a burning to our heart? How many times will we do that and keep doing it before we turn to Krishna? So he is waiting, waiting, waiting. And as long as we want to be nonsensical, he will graciously sanction. Okay, you still want to do this? All right, I am right here. As soon as you want to turn to me, I will help you. But as long as you still want this nonsense, I will allow it to happen. Go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead. But you still will get the reactions for the nonsense. You still get those reactions. So here, Krishna is trying to break our concept, the main maya, that I am the doer. It is due to my power that this sense gratification has come, and therefore I should enjoy. I have the full right to enjoy, because it is by my strength that I have obtained this the objects of my senses. So that's how one in ignorance thinks. Prabhupada explains in the previous purport, right almost in the middle of the purport in 193, the purport in 226, a realized soul in Krishna consciousness should not disturb others in their activities or understanding, but he should act by showing how the results of all work can be dedicated to the service of Krishna. The learned Krishna conscious person may act in such a way that the ignorant person working for sense gratification may learn how to act and how to behave for his own benefit. So how much will this help one? If you're working all day long, avajananti mam mudha, or something like that, you don't know Krishna at all, you're a mudha, just slaving all day long just to get something to eat, working so hard, and miserable, miserable, miserable. And then you see someone else who is working, and he is giving to Krishna, and he is light, and he is happy. just by that association, it can change the heart. So that is why a Krishna conscious person, even though he is not at all desiring the fruits of his work, he will work. And he will teach the one who is working in ignorance that he is not the doer. It is Krishna who is allowing him every bit of sense gratification that he calls his own. It is Krishna who is supplying the air he breathes. It's Krishna who is allowing his muscles to have strength so he can carry his beastly burden. It is Krishna who is giving him the intelligence how to outwit the enemy and get some money on the business deal. But it is, so therefore, since Krishna is the one who's allowing him this, he should serve Krishna with the fruits of his activity. And as soon, the second, the instant, Krishna takes away the power to think and outwit the enemy, there is no power. As soon as Krishna steals away the strength of our muscles, we are paralyzed and cannot do anything. And if he takes away our eyesight, what can we see? That's beautiful. So it is just by Krishna's mercy that anyone, whether he is a devotee or a non-devotee, can have any pleasure or happiness or even exist in this world. So therefore, if we acknowledge that we are not independent, and we acknowledge that we are dependent on Krishna, and therefore, because we are dependent, it is only proper that we serve that one, or at least offer something to that one who we are dependent upon, who is providing everything for us. So that type of preaching is there, and then seeing the example of someone who is actually in Krishna consciousness, happier than the one who is working so hard. So this is the consciousness. Now, in the last verse it describes the one who is in ignorance, bewildered, ahankara vimudatma, is bewildered by false ego. And then in text 28, the tattvavit, the one who has knowledge, the knower of the absolute truth, how he acts and what he knows is described. One who is in knowledge of the absolute truth, almighty arm, does not engage himself in the senses and sense gratification. Knowing well the difference between work and devotion and work for fruit of results. So this one verse talking about someone in knowledge, that he actually knows the difference between selfish and unselfish work. Work for Krishna, detached work, work in devotion, and work for one's own selfish sense gratification. This simple verse, just in the middle of the third chapter, has more knowledge and intuition as to the process of purification than any other religious scripture practically than I've ever seen. I'm from any other religion. In the Christian religion, there's no concept of working for Krishna, for God. And therefore, people will think in the Christian religion, the Jewish religion, this religion, that religion. People just think that God wants them to become materially happy, like the lowest level of karma kanda. But this is the desire of God, that they enjoy a big house and three or four or five televisions in the house and cars. And this is God's desire. But it is based, that is foolishness. That is foolishness. And people who are foolish actually go to God. They are pious, but they are foolish. They go to God to get this petty, selfish materialism. And they have no concept of what devotional work is. No concept of just simply working for the pleasure of Krishna. They have no concept of bhakti. And therefore, because that concept is absent, they have no concept, practically speaking, of what love of God actually is. So one who has knowledge of the absolute truth, he does, just like if one is in ignorance, he's kartaham, he's thinking himself the doer so he can be the enjoyer. But one who has knowledge of the Absolute Truth, knows either Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan, he doesn't at all become bewildered as to who he should work for and what is the benefit of work. But yet he is working. He is not renounced giving up work. He's renouncing the fruit of his work. He doesn't want to touch the fruit of his work because he doesn't want to become entangled in fruit of work. He knows the difference. He has knowledge. He knows the difference between fruit of work, selfish work, work for one's own sense gratification, and devotional work, or work in the service of the Absolute, or even nishkam karma, detached work. And therefore, because he knows the difference, he also knows the result, the different results that each work will bring, and he stays far, far away from selfish, sense gratificatory work. But, in the text 29, bewildered by the modes of material nature, the ignorant fully engage themselves in material activities. And what is the result? They become attached. So that is not good. They become attached and become entangled in fruit of activity. But what is Krishna going to say next? How should the wise deal with them? The wise should not unsettle them, although these duties are inferior due to the performer's lack of knowledge. Now this is very interesting. Why shouldn't those who have knowledge preach that this type of work is nonsense? You are foolish for engaging in this work. Again, they can preach like that. The wise can preach like that if people have the capacity to drop their work and actually stick to devotional service. But that kind of a person is very rare, who can drop his work like that and come to devotional service. One has to become very purified first through nishkam karma, actually, generally. Unless one is very fixed, if one just is very attached to one's work, and this is, in the old days, this is how the preaching was very much. That you'd preach to someone, this type of work is not good, this is foolish, blah, 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 blah. And then the person went, boing, you know, just join the temple like that. He would leave everything, donate his money and everything, donate his house, donate his car. And then about 6 months later, boing. He'd flip right back because he wasn't realized enough. He didn't have enough knowledge to actually maintain that devotion. It was a good chance in one sense given to him. But then very often when they'd go back this way, they would get bitter, they'd want their money back, they'd want their house back, they'd want their car back. All the attachments would come like that. Because they didn't have the knowledge. So if one doesn't have the knowledge, one shouldn't, if they don't have the capacity to actually stay engaged in devotional service, one should not unsettle them, even though their work, their duties are inferior due to the performer's lack of knowledge. Another good example of this is in the 60s, there were so many young people throughout the world who had a realization that modern corporate life was useless. And just work all day long, get a job from 9 to 5, and then go to your house with a dog and a house and go by subway back and forth to work every day just to get some sense gratification. They thought that this type of life is useless. So many young people didn't get involved in the modern materialistic culture. They had this understanding that this type of work is inferior, but they didn't have any knowledge. They had no transcendental knowledge. All they understood was this type of work getting money, getting job, getting family, getting thick carpet in your house, getting this, getting that, life insurance, car, stereo, I don't know what else they used to do, even people do. But anyway, modern materialistic life like that, putting money in the bank, collecting this, collecting old cars. I know someone in Bombay who his hobby is collecting Rolls Royce automobiles. And as of maybe 7 years ago, he had 27 or 28 of them. Did you see in Bombay? You ever see? You visit that man? I won't say his name now, because actually he's a good devotee. But no, not a temple devotee, not the temple president collecting. His father was a great devotee and a great friend of Prabhupada's. His trust donated money to build Krishna Balaram Mandir. It's up there on the name Bogilal Patel. He was actually a very great devotee. Prabhupada said, "He is my great friend." And during his last days, his last months and months on this planet, Bogilal Patel, Prabhupada had already left the planet. He was old already. He would spend all day with a tape recorder in front of him, playing a happening record, you know, with Prabhupada chanting on that in the 26th. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. He would just turn it over and over, and he would just be crying all day long. So much so that his children, on the doctor's order, they took away the tape recorder because they were afraid he was going to go blind all day long, just listening and crying and remembering Prabhupada and what Prabhupada had done. And then Giriraj Maharaj told me that they would come and visit him. And he was such a man that every time he would see the devotees, he was very wealthy, he would give 25,000 rupees, just like that. Just very, very kind, generous Vaishnava. Giriraj Maharaj said he probably never broke the rules in his whole life. You know, just by the culture, by his purva sanskar, he was so exalted. So when then in his later days, when the devotees would come and see him, he'd say, "Can I have a tape recorder?" Because he was just want to have one secret, one hidden away, so when they took his tape recorder, he could listen to Prabhupada again and again and again and again. So, I have to change channels over here, back to where we were. That if someone is working in the materialistic track, in the 60s, so many of the young people understood that there was no actual happiness in this way of life. But they had no transcendental knowledge. And what happened to them is they became hippies. This is what this is talking about. That if someone renounces work without transcendental knowledge, you become a hippie. And what happens? Instead of engaging in nonsense fruit of work, which is in the mode of passion, they engage in nonsense sex life, which and intoxication, which is in the mode of ignorance. So therefore, it is better to engage in work. Even if someone doesn't have transcendental knowledge, it is better to engage in work. And rather than getting them to stop work when they don't have actually the adhikari or qualification to stop work, it is better to teach them by good example how to work and offer the fruits of the work in devotional service, or be detached from the fruits of work, or best offer it to Krishna in Krishna consciousness. To teach them that. So that's what Krishna is telling Arjuna here. So in text 30, this is Krishna's order for Nishkam Karma. Mai Savani Karma Ni Sanyas Yat Yadhatma Chetasa Nirashir Nimamo Bhutva Yudasva Vigata Jara. Therefore, O Arjuna, surrendering all your works unto me, Mai Savani Karmani, you work unto me, but give it to me, be detached from your work and give it to me. And in this way, detachment, if one is too attached to his work, he can't give anything to Krishna. So therefore, if one is detached from his work, if you're performing Nishkam Karma, then that can easily, because you're already detached, that can easily lead to bhakti, working for Krishna's pleasure. So therefore, surrendering all your works unto me, with full knowledge of me, know what you are doing, have knowledge of why one is offering all his work to Krishna, and all the fruits of his work to Krishna. Why? Because Krishna is the Supreme. We are his part and parcel, we are meant to serve him. Jivera Swarupoi, Krishnera Nitya Das, that the actual swarup of the living entity, his actual constitutional position, is to serve Krishna. That is why, because we are Krishna's part and parcel. We should know this. The Bhagavad Gita teaches us basically this knowledge, who we are, who Krishna is, what is the relationship between us and Krishna, what is the nature of the material world, and how time mixes everything together in the material world. Have knowledge of these things. Know who Krishna is. Once I asked Prabhupada, it was right, I think, after my initiation, I asked Prabhupada that all, we are Krishna's servants. We can't avoid that. We're Krishna's eternal servants. So if even when we're serving Maya, we're serving Krishna. And when we're serving Krishna, we're serving Krishna. So what's the difference? Why bother serving Krishna directly? Why can't I stay in Maya and serve Krishna indirectly? I didn't ask it in such a clever way, but that was the basic idea. So he said, yes, everyone is serving Krishna, but we are either serving him directly or indirectly. It is unavoidable that we serve Krishna. We're either serving his Maya energy or his internal energy, chit-shakti. But if we serve indirectly, we cannot be happy. If we serve directly, willingly, especially with affection, with love, with devotion, then we can be happy. So this is what we're trying to do. Change our indirect service to Krishna, which is actually bewildered. Kartahamiti manyate ahankaravamudatma. We're not thinking. Even though we are serving Krishna indirectly, no one is thinking, I am serving Krishna indirectly. We're just trying to enjoy our senses. But if we're just trying to change that serving mood towards the senses, towards serving Krishna with devotion, that is Krishna consciousness. So work, O Arjuna. Surrender all your work unto me, with full knowledge of me, without desire for profit. Don't work to gain something. With no claims to proprietorship, don't think that the kingdom is going to be yours. And free from lethargy. Because if one doesn't have anything to gain from working or fighting, the tendency is to get lethargic. Means lazy. So free from lethargy. Not only don't desire anything from your work, but also be free from lethargy. And that means, and we often see this in the West, there are individual devotees may have their cars, and they are taken care of very nicely, they're very polished and maintained very nicely, and then the temple vehicle is there, and it's falling apart, and no one cares about it, and everything is ripped. So when it's for us, we work very hard. But when it's Krishna's, anyway, he's God. What does he need me to take care of his vehicles? He's doing everything. So working for Krishna not for ourselves, but still free from lethargy, one should do one's duty. And this detached platform working for Krishna is how bhakti comes. Now what happens if someone works like this? Text 31. Those person who execute their duties according to my injunctions and who follow this teaching faithfully without envy become free from the bondage of fruit of action. One becomes liberated. Slowly, one will become liberated. And one has to become free from envy to do this. Why? Because most people in the world, if they hear that you are working and not getting anything for your work, they will think that you're crazy. And they will think, who is this Krishna? He's exploiting you. And that's why they will call the Krishna consciousness movement a cult. Because they think there is someone on the top who's exploiting all these foolish people. And actually, it's true. There is someone on top exploiting everyone. And he's sitting in the temple holding a flute. So that because of their envy, they cannot accept that that's a proper position. They want to be the one exploiting. That's good. But for God to be the one who's the enjoyer, Bhoktaram Jagatapasam, they don't like that. So one who, without envy, follows Krishna's teachings faithfully, renounced from all work, surrendering all works unto me with full knowledge of Krishna, without desire for profit, without desire, no claim for proprietorship, free from lethargy, still doing one's duty, that person will get liberated. He will become free from the bondage of fruit of action. And what about those of us who do not choose to follow this teaching of Krishna from 30? We have to say, or Krishna says, that they are envious. But those who out of envy disregard these teachings and do not follow them are to be considered bereft of not all knowledge, befooled, and ruined in their endeavors for perfection. So make your choice, Arjuna, Krishna says. Do you want to gain liberation, freedom from the bondage of material activities, or do you want to be bereft of knowledge, befooled, and ruined? As you like. So, with a choice like that, one would think that everyone would just simply surrender to Krishna and give up their attachment to fruit of activities. Because it's clear that's what we should do. But Krishna explains why in the next verse, why people don't do that. And the problem is the three modes of material nature. Even a man of knowledge acts according to his own nature. For everyone follows the nature he has acquired from the three modes. What can repression accomplish? So people are so controlled by their natures. Everyone has a particular nature, a combination of the three modes of nature. And people are completely under that control. And it's so difficult for them to give up, surrender all their work to Krishna. It is so difficult to just surrender to Krishna because of we're all trapped in the three modes of material nature. So what is the solution? Back to the original point. That one should engage in karma yoga. One should, when dealing with people, we should get them to engage in the work born of their own nature, but slowly they should give up the fruits of their work to Krishna and become purified by that. And how can one become purified and enough to take up bhakti? The acharyas say, there's only one way actually that this can come about, and that is by association of sadhus. This is where one gets the taste, the change from being bewildered to being a man of knowledge and detached. An attached, bewildered person, be fool, and a man of knowledge. One gets the ability to change simply by good association. This is the conclusion of all Shastra. There are principles to regulate attachment and aversion pertaining to the senses and their objects. One should not come under the control of such attachments and aversion because they are stumbling blocks on the path of self-realization. So someone can say, Well, every man must follow his nature. So my nature happens to be, even a man of knowledge follows his nature. So my nature happens to be, I happen to like meat eating, intoxication, illicit activities, and gambling. So, what can I do? Even a man of knowledge follows his nature, so I have some knowledge, so I should also follow my nature. And this is my nature, I have this lower nature, what can I do? So Krishna explains in the next verse that, yes, according to one's nature, we have rag and dvesh. We have attachments and aversions. It is a fact. So even though the nature is there, with its own attachments and aversions, still, one should not fall under the control of these attachments and aversions. There are principles, Shastric principles, that regulate how those attachments and aversions should affect us, and we should surrender to those Shastric principles. And why? Because if we do not surrender to them, and we allow ourselves to be completely controlled by rag and dvesh, attachments and aversions, then the result will be that these attachments and aversions will be paripantano. They are very big stumbling blocks. It is such a big word, paripantano. You can imagine just sitting there in the road and you stumbling over it. So attachments and aversions are stumbling blocks. So therefore, one's attachments and aversions become regulated and controlled by Shastra. And finally, and the last verse we'll do today is another very famous verse. Srayan svadharma vigunat paradamat svanustita svadharme nidhanam sraya paradamo vayavaha. It is better. It is far better. It is not only better, but it is far better to discharge one's prescribed duties, even though faultily, than another's duties perfectly. Destruction in the course of performing one's own duty is better than engaging in another's duty, for to follow another's path is dangerous. So Krishna is telling Arjuna to fight. You are a Kshatriya, it is your duty. You fight on the Nishkam platform, offering all your work to me. Be free from lethargy, be free from attachment, be free from aversion, be free from desire for profit, have no claim for proprietorship, yet you should fight because it is your duty. Don't try to do the duty of a brahmana. Even though, Prabhupada explains it in the purport, even though a brahman's duty is peaceful and there is no bloodshed generally, although there are sacrifices where sometimes a brahmana may have to behead some creature in the Vedic times. But still, even though the brahman's duty is theoretically superior, it is not superior for you, Arjuna, to perform that duty. You should do your own duty. So someone could say, Arjuna might say, well, how about someone like, Prabhupada explains it in the purport too, Parthuram, he was a Brahmin and acted as a Kshatriya, so he didn't do his duty. And Vishwamitra was a Kshatriya, and he acted as a Brahmin, so he didn't do his duty. And right before me, I see Dronacharya, and he's a Brahmin, and he's engaging in fighting. So it doesn't seem so fixed. So Krishna's answer is that these are very rare cases. And when kings take sannyas, which is very rare, it is because they performed so much penance and became purified by doing their prescribed duty. And even Parsaram and Vishwamitra, because it wasn't their nature to perform these other duties, it was very austere for them and very difficult. And Dronacharya, everyone in every at the beginning of every Bhagavad Gita class, generally there's one person at least who asks, why is Dronacharya fighting if he's a Brahmin? Because it is not glorious for a Brahmin to fight. And Prabhupada explains in the purport that Parasaram and Vishwamitra, they were already so powerful due to their transcendental, their austerities, they were on the transcendental platform. So Prabhupada explains, being transcendentally situated, they could do so. They didn't have to follow their natures. They could go beyond them, although it was difficult. Vishwamitra still had some troubles. He would lose his temper and become angry like that. But as long as one is on the material platform, he must perform his duties according to the modes of material nature. At the same time, he must have a full sense of Krishna consciousness. Again, text 30 is the verse where Krishna explains how to perform nishkam karma in his service that will lead to bhakti. Mai savani karmani, unto me all sorts of karma or activities, sannyasya, I'm giving up completely, adhyatma, with full knowledge of the self, chetasa, with full consciousness, consciously, with full knowledge of what you're doing, you surrender all your work to me, nirashir, without desire for profit, nirmama, without thinking, oh, I am the owner, I am doing this, bhutva, being in that way, yudhasva, you fight, vigata jara, without being lethargic. So this is the platform. This verse describes nishkam karma in Krishna's service that will lead to bhakti. And this is the platform on which Krishna is advising Arjuna to act upon. Okay, are there any questions or comments?
It seems that several of these verses have a lot of instructions for us in our kind of present day situation. So, one question I was wondering could arise is that, could someone say, for example, like if you're living in the temple and doing full-time service, you're not a good example for other people trying to, you know, encourage them in karma yoga because you're doing something far beyond what they could possibly do.
But that is your test, to do something far beyond what they can do. And not be a materialistic person, just as attached as they are, living in the temple, preaching to them how they should give up the fruits of their activities, and then you take 50 or 80% of it when they give it up. You should be very different. You should be very detached, and therefore you're a good example of a priest, of a person on a higher platform. But there's also needed good examples of people living like them.
So that actually leads up to another part of the question. Is even in a present day context this also kind of rejected at the end of the Bhagavad Gita?
But not the way Prabhupada explains things. Prabhupada explains it so that everything can be accepted, as Krishna is saying it. He explains the inner, that confidential meaning. What should be, this is more on the nishkam karma level, where you're working, you're surrendering your work to Krishna, you're already working and you're surrendering it to Krishna. But what Krishna actually ultimately wants is sarvadhamam pratyajaya, that you surrender your work to Krishna before you surrender. Before you start working, you surrender, not after you decide what you're going to do. But most people actually are going to be on this platform. So therefore it is very practical to follow on this level. But we should still know that it is not the highest platform, that it's rejected 1,000 times over.
So then are we making a mistake if, say, we have a Sunday peace lecture with telling people how incredible material life is and how they've joined the rat race and how it's all just a useless waste of time?
Because no one ever stops anyway. But if you would say, yes, you should all give that up and move into the temple, and still no one would do it. But it might not be the best way to preach, and we found that. In the beginning, the preaching was like that. It was a very emergency situation. Prabhupada was just starting the movement. He didn't know how long he would be there. and he didn't know the saintly boys, Gurukula boys, walk by without a sound. Right? He didn't know what would happen after he left, maybe, in that sense. So he had, it was an emergency time, but now, in very many places of the world, almost in every place, in Europe, in India, in the United States, I don't know about so much about the other places. If someone is established in the world, they don't just say move in. If someone's doing nothing. Yes.
Krishna explained that if someone follows his duty according to the instruction of Krishna without any unjustness, then he will get rid of the bad karma.
He will get free from fruit of
the bondage.
A fruit of, yes.
Yeah. Then Prabhupada in the purple, they said that even if someone, an ordinary man, you cannot follow. Yeah. An ordinary man is perfect with his external intentions of the law, even so, only those who execute such orders be completely from the bondage of the laws of karma. So we can take it as an advantage and say, oh, I will not do anything or do anything until I can be free from karma. I agree with devotees, I agree with Krishna, so what is the limit?
The limit is that if you want to cheat, you're going to get cheated by Krishna because he's the best cheat. And another example is Patram Pushpam. So I'm eating, you know, my 30-course feast for myself every day, and I'm giving Krishna one leaf and one fruit and one piece of water, and says, "Well, Krishna," and say, "Well, this is what he wants." But the thing is, Krishna wants it with bhakti. See, the point here in this verse, see, always when you read a purport, you can pull out any one line and twist it as you like, but you have to understand what's being said in the whole purport. So the Prabhupada is explaining that it is better to be a person who has faith in Krishna, but even can't, he has faith in Krishna's injunctions, even though he may not be able to follow it properly, but he's trying his best. And he has full faith. So he is much better situated than the atheistic jnanis who write commentaries on Bhagavad Gita who have no faith in Krishna. They will never get liberated. Well, such a person will get liberated. It may not be immediately. That's what Prabhupada is saying. They will never be liberated from the bondage of eternal action. He will become liberated. The other person will become liberated. He didn't say he will become liberated immediately. But due to his faith, he'll become elevated until he can follow, and then he'll become liberated. If we want to cheat, you can always cheat. But the scriptures are not for the cheaters, they're for the honest people. Just like Prabhupada said, we keep things locked, not to stop the thieves from stealing, but to keep the honest people honest. A thief will always find some way to steal. No matter practically what you do. But an honest person, when he sees the lock, he remembers and he becomes good. So the Shastra is for the people who want to advance, not for the people who want to cheat. Okay. It's done. Glory to Srila Prabhupada. So tomorrow will be the last section in the third chapter.